Species.
Unite.
Species.
Unite.
We're creating a new system. When you look at it in that way, that's activism in itself, and that's actually fighting against a system that has billions of dollars, that has been spending billions of dollars, and not even asking people what they like to eat. They're not even considering the health. We're in the middle of a pandemic, and who gets hit the hardest? Black and brown communities with underlying conditions. Those underlying conditions stem from what they're eating.
Of course.
So I get to go into these people's apartments, look in their fridge, and then look at their medicine cabinet and see all of these drugs that they're taking because of ailments that they got from food. Meanwhile, food, if they were to change up how they eat, we were able to reintroduce that in a public sense, because with the fridge is like we're telling people, listen, you deserve to have access to this.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We have a favor to ask. If you like today's episode and you have a spare minute, could you please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts? It really helps people to find the show. This conversation is with Power Malu and Eloisa Trinidad. They are the team behind New York City's first plant-based community fridge. A community fridge is a form of mutual aid to address food insecurity. They supply free food and household supplies to people who have limited access to fresh groceries. And since COVID-19, more and more people have less access, especially good food and healthy food. Power and Eloisa met only a few weeks before they opened the fridge, and so far it's been a huge success. The fridge is outside Overthrow Boxing Gym on the Lower East Side in Manhattan, which is where I went to talk to them. We're here at Overthrow New York. Right outside the very front doors is the plant-based community fridge. That is all the rage in New York City. I looked, it's full. As I was standing outside, people were coming by.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's start by going back and just getting a little history from each of you. And I know there's a ton of history for both of you. Eloisa, why don't we start with you? You're a lifelong vegan, right?
At this point, almost. I grew up pescatarian, went vegan because my grandparents used to fish. And so fishes were my first in, right? And just love animals, feeling very connected to the earth. I grew up with centennial great-great-grandparents. So a lot of ancestral knowledge there. I didn't know, you know, what that meant, what that was. I just knew that I did not want to hurt another living being. That evolved into me becoming an activist at a young age. For me, food is very personal. And, you know, I grew up in the Dominican Republic with these centennial parents who were still very much holding on to their beliefs, right? And so we grew most of our own food. And even though we didn't have a lot, I grew up living off the land. We grew our own coffee, our own tobacco, everything. And so my experience, you know, as a child and up until the time I was 11 years old, was abundance of plant-based food and eating a highly plant-based diet. And so, you know, when I come here, I don't want to eat anything. And I start seeing how in a place that is supposed to be so wealthy, so rich, people don't have that access, right? And why is that happening? And so from the time I was just so young and, you know, we shared everything we grew, right? That my great-great-grandmother, my mama, as I call her, you know, she was like my first example of what revolution is. It's like you share, you know, you do mutual aid, you grow food, accept people for who they are, right? And I really first dived into activism through more of a anti-state sort of political lens after that came into animal rights activism. Co-founder of Vegan Activist Alliance, and our focus there is to end animal exploitation. We take a collective liberation approach. What that means is that we really look at how interconnected everything is, how there are different levels of oppression for all beings on the planet, and that there's nuance in achieving animal liberation. Executive Director at Chili's on Wheels in New York. And what we do there is make veganism accessible to communities in need. We really have done work from, you know, in Puerto Rico, from hurricane relief to the pandemic relief here that I started about a year ago. Our work is also very, very collective liberation focused, even though we lead with the animals, environment, and humans. So it all sort of comes together. So that's my work as far as that, but always through a human rights and animal rights lens, very anti-colonial, decolonial, and understanding that if we're going to make change, we have to definitely look at the root cause of oppression.
Awesome. And Power, for you, you grew up in New York City.
Born Lower East Side. Yep. I'm a New Yorker. So my parents are from Puerto Rico. I was born here in the Lower East Side. My parents are from Santurce and Camuy. I actually have been an activist since I was 8 years old, advocating for my mom when she would be on the phone and she can't speak proper English. And so I would get the phone and I would try to figure out what's going on and what she's trying to convey. I would go to with her to doctor's appointments or face-to-face, which is when you have like EBT cards, you have to go to these appointments. And I would notice how people would make fun of her because she can't speak proper English. And then I would like step in and I would kind of advocate for her. So that was kind of like my first stint with being an activist or an advocate of some sort and wanting to step up for people. And I started doing that for others when I would overhear if I seen a woman or an older man and they needed some help in translation or something, and I would see someone that's kind of giving them a hard time, and I would step in. And I started doing that at a young age. Even from the Lower East Side, I also became like a natural mediator for a lot of beefs that were in the different communities, because I would know someone from one project and then they would know me, and I would be in a spot, like in a park or something, and two guys would come say what's up to me and they had beef, and by default, I would be able to squash the beef in that way. So it's kind of like just naturally for me. I did a internship with Al Sharpton when I was a teen, just kind of like trying to figure out what this whole protesting and marching is all about. And, you know, I used to get him his macadamia nut cookies and milk. I used to answer phones. People used to call and try to see if he could represent them in different cases that were going on. And so it just like naturally started happening for me. And I was connected with all of that.
When you did that internship, did it change you? How did you walk out of that afterwards?
Yeah, it became more of a thing where this is organized. This is what you need to do. Like, it's not just going into the streets and just like yelling. It's actually like there's some organization that happens here. Like, people come, they volunteer. There's a schedule that happens. And I started learning all about that stuff. And then from there, I was into music. So I started a public access show. I would interview people. I would go into different clubs at a young age because I started promoting parties. I mean, my history is like really deep because I delved in all of these different worlds and they just like all somehow they meshed. You know, I was promoting parties. I was able to get into the clubs. Then I would ask the main promoter, can I host a show? Can I introduce the bands? I became friendly with all these bands that were coming to New York City in the 90s, trying to get known. And then I became this dude that was in everybody's music video. And it's just because I just became friends with everyone. So that Questlove and Charles Stone III put me in a Roots video. And as a joke, one of the subtitles said, how does this guy get in all the videos? And it was like an inside joke. And so that's like my world. It was just like all like came together. And then I was one of the creators of Lyricist Lounge Show, which was a sketch comedy show. And it was like bringing hip hop into the homes of people that never really like were into hip hop. But we were able to do that in a sense where we put some activist stuff in there. We put some cultural stuff in there. And we got artists like Common and Erykah Badu and Mos Def and all these guys to be in the show. And we would talk about like political things in the show. And we kind of like sneaked it in with comedy and hip hop. I'm part of this huge running organization. Bridge Runners is the name of the crew, but it's a worldwide movement called Bridge the Gap. And I'm one of the ambassadors of it. I travel around the world connecting with different groups and organizations that have started because of the Bridge Runners. It's basically you running out there socially, teaching people about health, nutrition, showing them around the neighborhood, different areas that they probably wouldn't even check out. There's people that live in New York City that never crossed the Brooklyn Bridge. And when they run with us, it's the first time that they actually crossed the bridge. And it's pretty ridiculous. But at the same time, there's places that I didn't frequent that running allowed me to do that. Because you're in a car or you're on the train, you're just going to where you're going and that's it. And everybody's like, boom.
I have that too. I know so many weird little spots all over the city because I just run every day.
Yeah. That has allowed me to travel around the world. About 4 years ago, I was in the former Yugoslavia. I went to Belgrade, Croatia, Zagreb, just connecting with different crews out there. And they were inspired by what we were doing out here. And they actually put a plaque in a park and they call it Bridge the Gap Park. And they planted trees, and each of the trees that they planted were different running crews from around the world that were inspired by this movement. And so it's things like that that you don't realize the work that you're doing because we're always in it. And even being part of hip hop, I'm very sensitive when things get hijacked because I know when it's pure and I know when people are doing it for the love. But then I'm very sensitive when I start feeling like different brands coming in to hijack and try to, like, for example, take the word community and
then just like try to brand the mutual aid. That culture.
All these things. And so I always, I'm like the person that like they are afraid of seeing because I'm always going to say that and call it out. And because I don't like people getting used. And unfortunately, our people get used and exploited when these brands come into play. And so that's what happens. But just being part of the running community is beautiful because it breaks down a wall and the stereotypes that people are used to hearing and it keeps people separate. But running is one common thing. And then from there, I started using that as a way to start protesting and start talking about things that people are seldom speaking about or they're afraid to talk about. So using that platform, this platform here, which is Overthrow, it's a boxing gym, but the history of it was an activist hub, 60s, 70s, 80s, early 90s. Like these people that were here, the Youth International Party, all they did was like they would plan protests. They would do theatrical protests. I was talking on the phone with a guy named Aaron the Pie Man about 3 days ago. He's a legend. He used to throw pies in the faces of politicians. And that was a theatrical way that he would protest. And people were full of it. Like they would call him out. It was awesome. A publishing house. There was so much happening in the space. I'm just kind of like an extension of all of those things. As far as feeding, he told me, he was like, we used to do all of that stuff. We're the predecessors of Food Not Bombs. Like, it's like they've been doing this. So we're just kind of like feeding off of that energy and continuing it.
So when did Plant-Based Community Fridge here at Overthrow start?
The fridge was born February 7th.
February 7th. So, it's a baby.
Yeah. There's been people just like constantly like wowed by the fact that it's a plant-based fridge.
Yes.
So they're like, oh, what's like you can put anything in there. And the important thing is to educate them, right? Because there are 80 plus fridges out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what makes this one unique
is that it's plant-based. Mm-hmm. And we got to make sure that that's what's put in the fridge, right? We want to gain the trust of the people.
And for people who are coming to the fridge, I would imagine a lot of them are not vegan.
Mostly they're not. Yeah.
A lot of them are not.
Yeah. We were intentional about, you know, putting all the different organizations on there because we really wanted to bring to light the issues regarding food justice and food sovereignty. If we want this world where oppression is decreased, whether for human or non-human animals, that we have to talk about the exploitation for everybody that's caught up in this multi-level oppressive system. How that helped was that now we were picked up by different media. And so it just became a general conversation. So we've managed to just insert this conversation about plant-based food. And usually, you know, you might get pushback, but that hasn't been the case at all. I mean, people have felt just so inspired by it. We have people from all over the world saying, how did you do it? We want to do it. Vegans, non-vegans, people who maybe never even thought about food justice before. And so now they're looking at this as a model. We put it on the fridge, what plant-based means. So no meat, no dairy. We spelled it out. We were intentional with the name all over it. So people know, you know, this is food that comes from the ground. This is food that is based on plants, right? And yeah, it has worked out.
And for people who haven't really thought about before, the whole bigger picture of food justice and oppression and animals, the circle and cycle of it all, will you just talk about that a little bit and why these pushes are so important, like
so,
this one?
So I'll just start and then Alisa could elaborate, but just going to people's homes and then having conversations with them. First of all, we got to try to get them to open the door because they've been fed so much garbage that they rather go hungry, because you got to remember that there's all of these organizations were getting so much funding from the government. They wasted so much food. They would throw the food in the lobbies or just leave it in people's door fronts if they didn't want to open. And so when we're going to try to like present a new kind of food that they may think that it's the same garbage that they're getting, you got to have these conversations with them. So we're knocking on the door, explaining to them this is different. They finally get to open and you get an opportunity to show them like, look, this is not what you're used to eating. And this is not coming from the government. Mm-hmm. This is us actually raising funds, telling people, listen, we need to go shopping for these people because they're hungry and they're not giving a choice as to what to eat. So we're reintroducing something, like we're creating a new system. When you look at it in that way, that's activism in itself. And that's actually fighting against a system that has billions of dollars, that has been spending billions of dollars and not even asking people what they like to eat. They're not even considering the health, right? We're in the middle of a pandemic and who gets hit the hardest? Black and brown communities with underlying conditions. Those underlying conditions stem from what they're eating.
Of course.
So I get to go into these people's apartments, look in their fridge, and then look at their medicine cabinet and see all of these drugs that they're taking because of ailments that they got from food. Meanwhile, food, if they were to change up how they eat, we're able to do that. And so we were able to reintroduce that in a public sense, because with the fridge is like, we're telling people, listen, you deserve to have access to this. Even if you don't have money, no matter what your socioeconomic status is, you deserve to have access to this. At the minimum, healthy plant-based food should be accessible to all of us, all our people.
Well, and I think, and I would imagine some people listening even aren't aware of how in so many communities, how limited access to healthy food is. It's not even an option for a lot of people.
Moving here, I realized that people don't have that access, right? And a lot of times that access isn't because something is 10 miles away. It could be right in front of your face and you cannot afford it, right? So there's that food apartheid. And why is there food apartheid? And, you know, when we go back and we start looking at the root cause and how food systems have been controlled by those in power historically through colonization, I mean, removing people from their land. When you remove people from their land, they don't have access to either water or food. How are they going to fight back? How are they going to survive? So it's a long history of oppression, not just in the U.S., but all over the world where colonization has happened. And so we look at this system. Who are the people that are living next to these factory farms? They're usually poor people of all backgrounds and usually tend to be people of the global majority. So Black and Indigenous people. Who are the slaughterhouse workers that are getting PTSD because, you know, they're performing these terrible jobs every day of killing another being? And then who are the people who are picking your produce, who are having their rights violated? And so there's just this multiple level of oppression, and it's a lot to talk about. So when we talk about food justice and food sovereignty, I mean, you can drown yourself in all the issues in the food chain, right? And so then we bring it back to the people who are eating the food, whose knowledge has also been interrupted because, you know, that is our background. You, in this part of the world, we were eating a mostly highly plant-based diet. And so, you know, I look at it as there's interruption there in the culture. There's interruption in who we are. And so we already have this knowledge and we've had this knowledge for very long. And so it's just bringing that back.
What's been some of the reaction from the people, not only from the fridge, because that's so new, but from other communities that you've been, you know, with Chili's and toward veganism and like, hey, this wasn't, you know, I'm not vegan.
Yeah.
But it is like, it's health and it's good.
A lot of appreciation. When I tell you, I think every time I went and delivered food during this pandemic, I went home and I cried because there were messages and messages. This is so amazing. Thank you. I'm not going to go to the food pantry anymore. People know when you put love and care into what you're giving them. And people recognize what good food is. They see the colors, they see the packaging, they see it. We're not even providing food that seems so out of this world, right? It's fruits and vegetables and grains and beans. These are all plants. The fact that someone can be so happy about receiving fruit or oranges or strawberries, it's heartbreaking. I was going to the schools, I still am, during this pandemic to provide food relief as well. And you see children happy just because they're getting fruit and they don't want to eat the school food that the city has provided during this pandemic. Completely culturally irrelevant, terrible, you know, lack of quality. And so it's always been, people want more of it, you know, because they know, and they know that you care. And I think there's this belief that people who perhaps are poor, who don't have access to certain things, do not know what quality is. They do not know what good food is. And that's just not true. They're just people just like all of us. And just because they don't fall with a certain socioeconomic bracket doesn't mean that they should not have the right to choose, right? That they should just accept what's given to them, which is one of the biggest issues within food justice work. Food justice work has come a long way, but historically, that part of it was not included, cultural relevance or even racial equity and why we're here. And so it's still evolving, but that's kind of what we're trying to do is get rid of that stigma, get rid of the gatekeeping. Why does the city and the state have all these billions of dollars, but yet they don't include the communities in making those choices as far as the food that's going to be there and empower them, right? Yeah. Say, you know what, you can be part of this too. Like, yes, we're providing this for you, but you can do this to help, right? There's a level of empowerment that there should
exist. And being part of the decision-making process.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
It's all like the gatekeeping situation, right? It's like pretty ridiculous that even when you're talking about fruits and vegetables, like I've been to warehouses to rescue food and it's like so frustrating because they have access to all of this food and they wait so long to get rid of it. Yeah. And then they call people to come pick up this food. By the time you go pick it up, it's not good anymore.
Right.
And so then they say, oh, you got to take this before you take this because this just came in today. And I'm like, but they're not going to be able to utilize this. Right. Oh, they'll eat it. Don't worry. You throw that in the fridge, they'll take it. And that's the freaking mentality that we're dealing with.
Yeah.
And it's so frustrating that I had to like bite my tongue because I knew that I needed to get this food to put it in the fridge. So, okay, I'm going to take this and I'm going to compost it. But the fact that you're telling me, literally saying beggars can't be choosers, that is so foul. But that is how people think.
That is
the mentality. They're like, oh, they're hungry. They're going to eat anything. Don't worry about it. Just give it to them. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're fighting against.
Yeah.
Like we're making sure that whatever we put in the fridge and how we educate people is that they deserve to have healthy plant-based food.
Yeah.
It's not going to be expired. It's not going to be open. If it's on your shelf and it's expired, it's open. Don't bring it to the fridge. Don't bring it to our pantry because if it's not good enough for you to eat,
our people ain't going to eat it.
Either. And that's what we're fighting.
Yeah. And we involve the community. And so whoever is here that comes to see us, they can be on shelter. They can be on house. We give them just sort of ways that they too can contribute because we think that that's really important work. Otherwise, it's not sustainable. If we don't empower our communities, that's one of the reasons why we want to provide education and, you know, programming that is going to teach people how to eat plant-based, how to learn about veganism from all aspects, the food justice aspect, the environmental, the animals, because it has to stay within the community. What we've seen a lot of times is that people set up something, just drop it there, leave it there, and disappear. And so there isn't any community building. And we want to, you know, get rid of that because that's not the model of what that we work from.
Yeah, it's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable.
No.
Yeah, and throughout all the protests since the end of May, one of the things that we have noticed is that community coming together. So there's people that actually come to the protest. They feed people, make sure that they have water. They exchange resources, share information. And then there's been a pivot to do this community work. And that's why you have a lot of the fridges that have popped up around the city. And there's more people doing community work and doing education workshops and things of that nature, because that is very important. And that's part of like us growing and building together is including the community and trying to figure out what exactly do they need and how can we provide those resources? Because it really is up to us.
New York City has one of the largest mutual aid networks in the world, and we're just really continuing to build upon that. And mutual aid has existed since humans have existed. And, you know, for a marginalized community, it has always been the way that we move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And since this fridge has started, I know it's not been very long, but are there more plant-based fridges popping up?
No, but there are people that ask us how it's done. Mm-hmm. And we're just straight up with them. It's like, it's a lot of work. So one of the youth that are part of the protesting,
yeah,
they actually have started one in Queensbridge that it's a vegetarian one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They wanted to do a vegan. I advised them that they should start slow just because you have to really literally be there like every day watching, talking to people, sharing information, and it's not an easy thing.
Yeah.
So we don't want to set anybody up for failure.
They put on their fridge vegan food and no meat, no fish. And so just from being inspired by this initiative, and yeah, like Power said, a lot of people have been contacting us, you know, as far as how do we start our own? And I think so many people might have wanted to do this, but I think there's always this fear that there's going to be pushback, like, oh, you're pushing an agenda and the vegan agenda and the plant-based agenda, right? Oh, yeah, I don't know, the big broccoli agenda. You know, like, is that what we're pushing? And I understand that as a person of the global majority, I get it, right? Because, you know, there's a lot of nuance and perhaps people don't have access to things or people are very attached to their culture. But when you build that bridge and when you really work with your community and people do see that you're caring for them and you're part of the same community, that conversation is very different. I've never gotten any pushback when I am trying to amplify the message that, you know, we need plant-based food. We need a better food system. But that comes from understanding who's in front of you also and who you're speaking with. I think one thing to really keep in mind is when we're talking about liberation for any being, we have to look at things from a systems change point of view. That yes, we need to raise awareness. We need to work with individuals and individual communities. But we're also fighting something so much bigger and global ideas all over the world, right? When we're talking about food justice and people not being healthy because they're being fed all these animals as food and not having access to the information that perhaps somebody who makes more money has access to. There's just so many layers. And so there's information there, but it's challenging to get it, especially if you're a person who doesn't make enough, who's working 2 to 3 jobs. Are you spending 3 hours a day on the internet Googling nutrition? Probably not.
No, and also even learning how to cook or what to do with
exactly.
It if it's never been in your wheelhouse and you've been, you know, eating whatever's there and a lot of processed food and a lot of animals. Vegan food's intimidating unless you've been exposed to it and learn even really simple things. People are just a little bit afraid of it when they don't know.
Yeah.
So it does take attention.
That's the key word you said, afraid, right?
Yeah.
Fear always stops people from trying something different, from breaking out of the norm.
Yeah. How did veganism come to you? Like, how did you come to it? Was it activism or was it health?
No, it was more like I started doing intermittent fasting. So it had to do with me combining my training with a different style of eating. I started paying attention to how a lot of these industries are making so much money off of pumping the lie that you have to eat so much. And then not just so much of just anything, but specifically protein. You have to eat more regularly. And I started playing around with this thing that I learned about called intermittent fasting. And I was like, well, I enjoy fasting. Let me see if I can do it a little bit more regularly. From that, I started reintroducing foods into my system and I started paying attention. I was like, this don't feel right. Like when I eat this, I got a little pain over here. Things that I normally would ignore. And then so little by little, I just started eliminating those foods.
Yeah.
And then it just became like the final step was salmon. And then I was like, I wasn't craving this kind of food anymore. And then I was like, you know what? I don't crave this food anymore. I'm having so much energy. I'm so focused. I'm running marathons. I'm running ultra marathons. I'm doing crazy workouts. And how is it that what they're telling you that you need in order to sustain is the opposite of what I'm doing? And I was like, obviously, it's because it's all about making money, right? So they're trying to pump all of this stuff. Like, you got to eat all of this stuff because you got to buy. It's all based off of consumption. I started learning a little bit more, and I was like, I don't even have to eat that much. I just have to eat nutritious food. And I was like, I'm not even going to go back to eating this kind of food. And then little by little, through meditation, you know, I started doing a lot of meditating and then just getting more in tune with myself. And then I started paying attention to the other aspect of it, is about the animals and how I love all beings. So I started connecting more with that, and just, it just became naturally, like, about four years ago.
The veils just keep coming off,
yes,
right?
Yes, right. Yeah, and like, so that's why one of the reasons that we have literature on the fridge. And so people come and get food, but there's also literature for them to take away and learn and, you know, research. And so we always want to back things with a layer of education. We're living in a city. We're in New York City. If we have the ability to make those choices, and if we make that accessible to people, that will be better for them. And like Power said, those layers start peeling off. And, you know, I like to think that most people are good people, and they want justice, and the same justice that they want applied to them, they want to apply it to all beings. The people that come to the fridge, there's never like any pushback, because we're creating a safe space where you can tell us that you don't know. You can tell us that you're lost, or that, you know, you think of this or an animal still as food. And we'll talk to you, because we're engaging with you and really answering your questions, because it's the only way to move forward is by having that dialogue.
Well, and it's positive.
Yeah.
We're not about shaming people. Like, that's kind of contradictory if that's what we were to do.
Yeah.
So we're welcoming, like, there's people that don't know about it, and we just like try to explain to them and share information. It's like the same way we're trying to remove the stigma that comes with being hungry and being in need of healthy food. We want to break that stigma of like, oh, you're just pushing, you know, the vegan lifestyle on people. Because that's not what we're doing. We're just telling them this is what we're doing. We're making this type of food accessible to everyone. And then we're sharing information with them.
Exactly. Planting seeds, right? Planting those seeds. And we think that once we start having the educational programming, that's going to be even more successful.
How's that going to work, the education?
We already have chefs on board. We have people like who work at sanctuaries that can speak to the youth. I mean, our goal is to like, for the younger kids to really bring them to like a sanctuary and feed them this amazing food and have them be out in nature, because, you know, these kids are here, they're in the city, you know, they don't get to experience that.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
When we launched the fridge the first day, like, we had all the civil rights leaders that were also vegan on display, and the history of veganism within different communities. And so it really provided a different opportunity for conversation. And so we're talking about, you know, Cesar Julio Cesar Chavez, we're talking about Coretta Scott King, and Angela Davis, whose picture is upstairs, right? So we're walking up. And so all these amazing, amazing people who have been at the forefront of fighting for that Latinx community or the African-American community, while also understanding that, you know, this idea of justice can extend beyond human animals. We always try to connect that. We deliver that message in that way versus having something that seems so separate from people that is also part of the people.
Yeah. It's a much bigger thing than a meal. It's a whole life.
We're using the food to get into people's lives.
Of course.
Yeah, we share with them.
Because food connects you, you know? I mean, we all have to eat. And so when you have that in with people and you're talking about food, it's a different conversation. And so we're sharing with one another. We're breaking bread, you know? And so that's another thing with us. Like, you know, even some of the people that help out here, we tell them, you know, grab stuff, take stuff home. There is no distinction between the have and the have nots. We want to get rid of that. We're all here. We're all in it together. We're helping one another. You're my community. I'm your community.
I mean, you got like chefs that go to the fridge, like literally take a break from the restaurants around here and they come. We got students that come here. They we allow them to work out, and then they'll tell us mm-hmm. they only get like $40 a month for food.
Yes, food insecure
and so
students.
We'll connect them. They might have just gotten an apartment, and mm-hmm. then so of course they're not going to have funds to buy healthy food. Mm-hmm. So we're able to provide that for them.
That's awesome.
A lot of delivery people. So the people who are delivering your food are food insecure.
When I was just mm-hmm. outside, two different delivery guys mm-hmm. came up on their bikes.
Yeah. That is very common,
and that's what they're doing, like riding around with food. That must smell so good. And
exactly.
They're starving,
and,
right?
And food that they cannot afford. Yeah. And that just is one of the best examples of having something that's there, right? The food apartheid, but you can't afford it. And I mean, these people are delivering food all day long, and they come to the fridge so they can get food so they can take to their families.
And they're riding around on their bikes, and it's mm-hmm. freezing cold.
In the freezing cold. Yeah. And all types of weather. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's like using this tragedy or this pandemic to actually bring people together.
I mean, and you are. That's mm-hmm. that's what this is.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things about the fridge is that within, you know, it's done two things. So there's food justice where animals are included as food. And then there's the vegan movement who might not otherwise focus on food justice. And it's sort of blurred this line where everybody has come together to say, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I want to support it. And so you have the people who usually would use animals as food saying, no, I'm going to, you know, donate all this plant-based food. And then the other people who are vegan, who perhaps do not think about collective liberation, saying, I want to get involved in this too. Like Power said, is bringing all these different groups together, which is so necessary for liberation. If we don't come together, we're not going to go very far.
Well, and there's been a giant gaping hole in the animal rights world mm-hmm. in terms of seeing bigger than the animal rights world for years. Mm-hmm. Not all of it, but it's always kind of been there. Mm-hmm. And so this is what like the kind of merging mm-hmm. and bigger picture. And the reason I think a lot of it was there back in the day mm-hmm. was because it was such a small world. And so right. they needed like that, that focus mm-hmm. because no one else was doing it. Right. Right. But the beauty of this is that it really is, it's broadening everybody. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
In terms of growth, education, and that sort of thing, how can people help that like aren't in New York?
Yes.
Plant-based community fridge, because it does cost, it does cost a lot to keep that
fridge. Yeah, and
stock.
So we do a few things, and just to explain the cost, we rescue food, and so there is that environmental component to it, you know, but as Power said, there are times where perhaps the food that we're going to rescue is not going to last longer than a day. And so we have different types of community members. We have people who are unsheltered and unhoused. They don't have access to a kitchen. So a lot of times that food cannot be rescued. We have to buy specific type of food for them.
Peanut butter,
jelly, apples, fruit,
bars,
things that they can eat
right
away.
There, yeah.
Then we have the unsheltered folks who may be in a shelter, but have very limited access to kitchens. And then we have the other people who may have a home, but are food insecure. And so they can cook everything else that we have. So we really have a few different community members with different needs. That's why we have to supplement mm-hmm. through donations because yeah. we wouldn't be able to meet those needs.
Okay, so Venmo.
Venmo.
Yeah. And plant-based community.
Yes,
fridge.
And any businesses that are out there that have raw ingredients, grains, you know, any type of cereals, oatmeal, things like that, fruits and vegetables, farms yeah. as well. Like that's kind of what we're looking to do is work with these businesses that have excess and also that may want to donate, you know, something that is prepackaged or beans or things like that. So businesses can contact us to collaborate and then the Venmo for everybody else.
That's awesome. Thank you both, not only so much for tonight, but for doing not just the fridge, but all the like 18,000 things that the two of you do to change the world.
That's the goal. You know, we hope to, you know, when we feel empowered, we want to show that in hopes that other people feel empowered. Because, I mean, I think, and I think Power can agree, everyone can contribute to the revolution in whatever way.
To learn more about Overthrow Community Fridge, about Power Malu and Eloisa, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We will have links to everything.
We're on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare minute and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps people to find the show. If you'd like to support the podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. You could do so by going to our website, speciesunite.com, and clicking donate. I'd like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knudsen, Natalie Martin, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, and Anna Kollner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day.